All right. Can you guys hear me at the back? Excellent. All right. My name is Shobhit Sahai. I'm a technical product manager in Office 365 team. I also have Tarek, and we both work in the Microsoft headquarters back in Redmond. And today we are going to talk about a couple of interesting topics: spam, virus, malware, data secrecy, encryption, all those scenarios. And I thought I'll use this slide to talk about why you shouldn't be in this session. And if your company is, for example, not worried about the external threats, or spam does not bother your users, or if you're not concerned about important sensitive information leaving your company, then you probably wouldn't want to be in this session. So I thought it's the early morning, so probably to get started, we'll probably do some facts and trivia. So if you know the answers, just raise your hands, or if you you can speak them out. So a couple of trivias to get started. So first of them, true or false, over half of the messages received today in exchange online are spam. Raise your hands if you think this is true. All right, I think it's about 60% of the people who feel that it's true, and the answer is correct. And about 67% of the messages that we receive today are spam, and this is not just Exchange Online's figure, this is a generic industry-wide figure that we receive. And in general, this trend is decreasing. It used to be well over 96% back in 2007, but over time, this has been decreasing a lot. Having said that, in the last couple of weeks, there have been some intensified spam campaigns. So for example, if you go online and search about different articles from Wall Street Journal, you'll find a lot of spam attacks and phishing attacks happening in the last couple of weeks. All right, next trivia. True or false, Exchange Online Protection uses single antivirus solution. People who think true, raise your hands. That's great. Nobody thinks that's true, and that's correct, because EOP, which stands for Exchange Online Protection, which is our Microsoft solution for spam, virus, and malware, uses three different AV engines. And the key here is that the strength of the solution is based on the combination of these three AV engines. All of these three AV engines are also available on VirusTotal, where they provide the sample codes and submissions of latest viruses and malware that are coming up. Next up is fill in the blanks. So blank was the latest Office encryption technology released in 2014. So you can speak it out if you know about it. No one? Oh, there's an answer somewhere. RMS, unfortunately not. RMS has been there for a long time. S/MIME, that's incorrect as well, because that has probably been there for us, it's older than me, so it's been there for a long time. The answer is Office 365 Message Encryption, which is our latest encryption technology that we released in February earlier this year. And in this session, we will talk about all of those encryption mechanisms. We'll talk about RMS, we'll talk about S/MIME, we'll talk about Office 365 Message Encryption. So that's the right session for you. All right, the final question. Office 365 Message Encryption and EOP only work with the cloud mailboxes. True or false? People who think this is true, raise your hands. That's great. This audience is pretty smart. The answer is false, because EOP and Office 365 Message Encryption both can be used for your on-premises mailboxes as well. So you don't have to move your mailbox to cloud. We can still filter or encrypt those messages without moving them to the Office 365 mailboxes. So, as you might have figured already, there are two main things that we are going to cover in this session. The first one is really around how can you protect your organization with Exchange Online Protection. And this is where we handle different spam, virus, and malware scenarios. We'll talk about how EOP is working today and what the infrastructure and architecture looks like. And we'll also talk about the roadmap items and, you know, what you can expect us from in the next 6 to 12 months for EOP. And then we'll do a lot of discussion around data secrecy with different encryption controls that you have with Office 365. And I want to stress on the word that you have it versus the encryption standards that we use in our data centers. So obviously, there are different data centers, and there are different encryption mechanisms that are used within those data centers in Office 365. The things that we are going to discuss today are the controls that you have that you can take with Office 365. We'll also talk about some of the roadmap items that is going to come up for encryption. So let's get started with EOP first. And there are really four main pillars where EOP stands out. The first one, obviously, is EOP is for protection against spam, malware, and virus. And we have the best-in-class infrastructure and protection against these scenarios. And the key thing here, I mean, it is the fact that it's basically learning on its own. So every time there's a new malware or new virus that's found, it learns that. If there's a spam campaign that's going on, we'll make sure that we understand that spam campaign. And next time that spam campaign comes up, we are totally going to block it or learn from it and take corrective actions. Same goes for the antivirus engines. So for example, we are using three different AV engines. So even if one of them misses that AV, or that particular virus, you still have two different antivirus engines that can go and protect against it. The second pillar is the fact that it's integrated with Office 365, which means every single Office 365 data structure or infrastructure requirements is extended onto EOP as well. So for example, another case here is if you're familiar with Forefront Online Protection for Exchange, quick raise of hands of people who are familiar with FOPE. I can see some people in the audience. That's great. It used to have a different UI for you to log in and different UI for you to manage your mail flow. But with EOP, one of the things we are trying to do is bring those experiences together in Office 365. So you don't have to use two different admin controls. You go to one single place, and you manage all of your needs from that one single place. Third piece is around protecting sensitive content. And this is where the fact that EOP is based on exchange transport rules extends to the fact that you can combine that with data loss prevention. So for those of you who were in the session yesterday where we talked about how we are expanding the EOP just beyond exchange into SharePoint and Office applications and also the Windows file shares, you can use that along with EOP. And the same goes with encryption as well, where you can combine that with someone in the audience already pointed out, Azure RMS, or in this case, we'll also talk about Office 365 message encryption. And last, but not the least, is the enterprise class reliability. This is really about the fact that we are using the Office 365 infrastructure, so all those good things fall into EOP as well. So everywhere Office 365 is provisioned, EOP is also by default going to take a play there. So we have those data centers across the globe, and your mail is always processed in those regions only. And that promise continues to hold with EOP as well. The other fact that I would like to point out is that the SLAs are financially backed. And if you have a support escalation that comes up, you will get support from the people who actually author the tool themselves. So these are the real developers who have actually written the code for EOP, and they will be on call to help you as well in case of there is any escalation or any support requirements. So how can you use EOP? The answer is in two ways. If you are already using Office 365, and quick raise of hands if you are using Office 365, I see a good 50% I would say, of the room. Each mailbox on Office 365 is already getting filtered with EOP. But that's not the end of it all. If you're using Exchange Server 2010, 2013, you can still use EOP with your on-premises mailboxes as well. And the way you do that is you basically set up a bunch of connectors, both inbound and outbound, and in those scenarios, every mail incoming and outgoing will be filtered through EOP. So in this case, for example, you're looking at john@yahoo.com sending an email to amy@contoso.com. If we make that MX switch over, the mail will first start flowing through Office 365 and then get delivered back to your organization. And the same applies even on the flow back. So if you send an email, it'll first go through Office 365 and then come back to john@yahoo.com. The key thing here to note is your mail organization is obviously on-premises infrastructure. It's not on the cloud. But the filtering will still happen on the Office 365 layer. So you don't have to move your mailboxes. We'll still be able to scan them for any malware and so on scenarios. So I thought the best way to talk about would be about this would be to just deep dive straight into the architecture. So there are two slides here. Let's walk them through one by one. The first slide here is around the inbound filtering, which is where you'll understand how we protect your email if they're coming inside your organization. So obviously, based on the MXNet record resolution, the mail will get filtered through, and the first step is really around IP based edge blocking. And this is really around how we use the different blocklist providers. And EOP uses four different blocklist providers, including SpamHaus, for example, where we will look at the blocklist submissions from them. And based on those submissions, we will detect that this is a bad email. This is a spammer who's sending those emails. This IP address belongs to a spam organization. So based on that, we will be blocking those messages. And I would say about 80%, and that's an average I'm using here, but about 80% of those messages do get blocked at this step itself. Once the messages pass through that step, the next step is virus scanning. And this is where you have the three different antivirus engines, which will scan those emails and delete them automatically or take corrective actions as needed. The next step is policy enforcement. And this is where you can combine EOP with things like encryption. If you want to make sure that those emails are encrypted or so on, you can take those steps here in this scenario. Finally, from this point, you will move on to the spam protection. And this is where we use different technologies to make sure that we are blocking those spam from anything like SPF checks or the bulk mail detections to international spam filtering. All of those things, mechanisms, will be used at this step. And based on the scanning, we will move those emails to either quarantine or to your junk mail folder and so on. And again, quarantine is available to both the admins as well as the end users of your organization. Finally, you'll also notice something called as the spam analyst. Now, these are real people spread across the globe, because you still need that one unique human set of eyes to make sure that there's a spam submission that we are able to learn from those spam submissions. So once you send them in, we will make sure we investigate those spam on whether it was false positive or false negative and so on, and take corrective actions. And finally, once all of that has taken place, we move the message back to your corporate network. The outbound scenario is pretty similar, just a few things that might differ here. You obviously go to the regular virus scanning engine, so you have that same blend as well as the policy enforcement, because you might apply DLP policies. So if you're sending sensitive content, we will automatically detect that sensitive content and apply certain actions to it, which might be anything from blocking that message to all the way to notifying the user, but still allowing him to send that message so that his productivity is not hampered. Then we go through the spam protection, and the reason we do the outbound spam protection is because you still want your IP address within your organization to be reputable, because you don't want to be on the block list of someone else's protection. So we make sure that we do that outbound spam heuristics. Finally, based on each message that has been sent outside your organization, we assign a score to that message. Now, the lower the score, the better the message. It may be a good message, it's not a spam. So those messages are sent through a different outbound pool. And if you notice, there are multiple outbound pools. And the reason for that is, again, because we want to protect the IP for your organization. So we make sure that you're not getting on someone else's block list. And having multiple outbound pools helps us do that. And finally, if the message has got a high score, meaning it could be a spam, so someone inside your organization is actually sending spam, we make sure that we send it through a different pool. We call it the high-risk delivery pool, and those messages will be sent accordingly. And then once all of those are taken care of, your messages are good to go. So that was the architecture on how EOP is working behind the scenes. And with that, let's actually quickly jump over and see a quick demo on how this is working for an admin, how the experience looks like. Any quick questions before we do the demo? There's one question at the back. I'll go ahead and repeat it. And there's a mic that Blanca is carrying, so she might be able to help you. We'll take one question and then we'll move on.
For outbound spam that goes to quarantine, who gets notified about that? Because if they're not part of your organization, they don't have a login to 365 to release it.
So is this a question more for the outbound spam notification to your admins, or is this for external guys?
So who gets it? So if I sent an email from my organization to Contoso,
yep,
who can log in and actually see that quarantine? Because they don't have an account with my 365 tenant.
Right.
So how do they see that mail's been spammed, or does it send a quarantine notification to the person who sent it?
So today it's only by a notification. So that message is, you can send notification emails. Not the message. Message itself, they are not moved to the quarantine yet. So, but that's something we are looking into. That might change very soon. So we can connect offline on this question as well. So here's an example of how you can leverage EOP. Like I said, we have single administrative console. We are able to manage this straight from Office 365 Admin Center. So here I have the Exchange Admin Center, and all of EOP protection can be accessed from the Protection tab. If I click on it, you will see a bunch of different things come up. The first of it all is the malware protection. And obviously, I have a default policy for each of these scenarios. I've also created my custom policy because I want to do things differently for my organization. So if I open this up, and I'm obviously there's some basic names and what you can do with this particular policy. But if you look at the things that I've set up here, there are different options here. So if you get a message which has a malware, you have the option of either blocking that entire message, or you can say, you know what, I still want to receive that message, but just take off the attachment, because most of the cases, it's the attachment that contains that malware. So you can combine those scenarios or take select different options from that. You can also at the same time send notifications. So in this case, your notifications can again be sent to your sender or the recipient of the message. In this case, you can send him a message saying, hey, don't open this mail because it's a malicious email. At the same time, you can also allow for admin notifications. So your administrators get a copy of those email or get a notification saying that this message was received in the organization and it contained a malware. Of course, this, like I said, it's applied to through Exchange Transport rules. So each and every policy that you create, it's going to be based on, or it can be customized to certain domains or certain groups or certain users. It's just like any other ETR. The next step that I want to show you here, I'm going to close this window, is connection filtering. And think about this as the block list that I mentioned in the inbound architecture. And what you can do on this one is you can, I have a default policy here, and you can add specific IP addresses or block them by simply adding them to your allow and block list. So in this case, I have a couple of IP addresses that I've added in my allow list. The first or second one, I think, is from bing.com, so I know that's not a spam engine, so I just added that into my IP allow list. You can similarly also add IP addresses to your block list. The other thing that I will point out here is the enable safe list feature at the bottom. You will see a check mark right next to it. And this is really asking, allowing you to basically subscribe to the EOP block list scenarios. So we have four different vendors that we work with, SpamHaus and three other which are available, which you can read more on TechNet. And in fact, we also published a white paper on EOP on Office 365 Trust Center, where we talk about how we are using the block list from those particular partners within EOP's infrastructure. So if you enable this, you will basically be able to leverage those block lists as well. It's totally an optional feature, but we do recommend highly that you do it because, like I said, about 80% of the messages do get blocked on connection filtering stages. And adding an IP address is fairly simple. You simply come here and enter the IP address and click on OK, and that would be added to your block list scenario. The next up is content filtering. It's great to block something at the network layer, but you still want to you inspect the content of the message and take actions based on it. So this is where you get different options. So let me open up the default policies that I've set up here. And you'll see different things here. First of it all is the spam and bulk mail protection. And obviously, you will notice a thing at the top which basically says spam and then high confidence spam. And the reason for that is spam is basically, think of that as, yes, we are 99% sure this is a spam message. So we'll definitely take certain actions. And by default, our recommendation is that we move this to your junk mail folder. So the users can decide, yes, this is definitely spam. I do not want to receive it. There's also something called as the high confidence spam, which we think is definitely spam, but there's a minute chance that it may not be a spam. In this scenario, we would prefer that your users can put this into quarantine, and they can decide for themselves whether they want to move it back to their junk mail folder, back to their inbox, or whatever not. And you can retain these messages for 15 days in quarantine, and you can also send end user notifications for how what the messages are and what actions can you take from those messages. So if you want to retain those messages or just delete them, You can do that through the end user notification. There's international spam filtering. This is where you have different locales and different regions, over, I think, 87 different languages and 250 different regions where you can block that message from. So I remember I was talking to a customer in Ukraine, and they had a lot of spam messages coming in Arabic language. And they were able to go back and take this international spam filtering action where they blocked all those messages in Arabic language. And they saw a sudden decline in those number of messages. And it's important because you get a lot of those messages, and that consumes a lot of bandwidth. I mean, at the end of the day, 2/3 of the messages are spam, so you're saving a lot of bandwidth there. Finally, there are advanced options, and this is where you can, obviously, there are content or there are certain things in your messages like images or tags or JavaScript and things like that. You can take those actions from the spam filtering. And you can also enable something you call as a bulk mail, and I'm going to talk about that in just a bit. And you can turn it on by default. That will help you allow block those bulk mail messages as well. Somebody back in the back asked a question on the outbound spam. So you have the option here where you can set up the different policy for outbound spam. And in this case, typically we are sending a notification copy to your, whoever is the administrator or email address that you want to provide. You can send a copy of that suspicious email so that they can take an action based on that or carry forward from that point. Finally, there's quarantine. This is where you will be able to move messages back to your inbox or directly move them or delete them and take corrective actions. I'm not seeing any quarantine items this morning because I made sure that all of them are cleaned up. So either they are in my junk mail folder or they are back to my inbox. So let's move back to the slides. And talking of spam, there are two main categories of spam that, industry combines, and Microsoft also looks at it the same way. And Microsoft in general has been in the spam industry for a while. We block 10 million messages every minute. That's combining both Microsoft, obviously consumer services, and also our enterprise services. And there are two main kinds of spams. One is obviously the phishing campaigns. This is where some users will try to get credentials of high-value propositions in your organization, try to hack into their account. This might be the CIO, CEOs of the company, try to get their access. The second is bulk spam, which is interesting because some users like to receive bulk spam. This is also called as the gray mail, if you may like. And some users don't like this. So, and a classic example of bulk mail is something like a promotion or a newsletter. So think about you went to a networking event, something like TechEd. You dropped your address card or your business card. And the next thing you know is your email inbox is full of all those spam messages, which some of them could be interesting. I mean, if you are generally interested in sending those messages or receiving them, you don't mind them. But there are other users who hate to receive those messages, and they complain a lot about it. So one of the challenges that we had with, or the way we are trying to solve this is we are trying to add something called as the enhanced protection from bulk mail. So previously, for example, where you had all of these different messages from your daily deal to dry cleaners offer, previously all of them were referred to as one single category, one single bulk mail. But what we are trying to do now is, if you look at this animation, we're trying to move all of them into four different categories. And the way we are trying to do this is by something called as the bulk complaint level. So each message will be assigned a particular bulk complaint level. And the lower the bulk complaint level, the more likelihood that message is good, it's not a bulk mail. Higher the bulk mail complaint level, it's definitely a bulk mail. And you can take different actions based on these bulk complaint levels. Today, it's possible to do that through without the UI through your PowerShell commandlets. But very soon, we are launching the UI components for these so that your administrators can directly set up the different bulk complaint levels and, again, assign those policies based on different users. And again, this is where the advantage of using this on top of Exchange Transport Rules comes into play, because you can have different bulk complaint levels for different set of users. So for the CIOs or CEOs of the company who do not want to receive those messages, you can set a really high threshold, like a 9 level, so that a very small level, so threshold level of 3, for example. So none of those bulk mail messages go through. But for someone else in the organization, you can set a higher threshold, meaning more bulk messages can come through. So moving on to the reporting pieces, obviously we provide detailed reporting with EOP, and you have the core four core principles we like to target are that the reports be transparent, they be relevant, actionable, and should be very easy to use. And the reports in general, they will be surfaced via the Office 365 Admin Center. So if you log into your tenant, you will be able to see them directly on the tenant. You can also download the copy of the report through an Excel file. And the cool thing here is that the report is connecting internally from the Excel client directly to the reporting web services, so you don't have to do any additional steps. Now, in terms of duration, there are obviously summary reports which can go as far beyond as 180 days. But if you need reports which are more detailed, we provide detailed reports for up to 7 days directly through the admin console. Or if you want reports, detailed reports beyond 7 days, that's when you can request there's an option to request this directly, and then we will send you a copy of those report when they are ready and once they are provisioned. Typical timeline here is about 24 hours, but it can take as long as about five days. And that's where we promise to give those reports to you. Reports are great, but then there are also scenarios when you want to look at that one particular message. You're not worried about, okay, I don't want to look at those 10 different messages. I want to know about that one single message, whether it was sent or not, whether it was received, what happened to that message, and so on. For those purposes, we have the message trace capabilities, which you can access again from Mailflow and through message trace. And you can use different parameters again, like sender, recipient, and when the message was sent, and so on. And just like reports, the message trace are also available either via the Office 365 Admin Center or via the Excel file that you can download for your later use. And once again, if there is a report that or a message trace that you need for a longer duration, you can submit a request. You will get notified immediately saying, yes, we are provisioning your request. We will give you a copy once it's ready. And within 24 hours or maximum up to 5 days, based on the duration of the report that you asked for, we'll give you a copy of that report as well. So one more thing that I wanted to point out was the fact that EOP, and this is specific more for our on-premises customers, because it's using the same Office 365 data centers and same infrastructure behind the scenes, every single tenant that we provision will be provisioned in the, or the mail will be provisioned in the area where your tenant is provisioned. So we have data centers today across all of these regions, and this is a growing story. So, and we understand this is important for different geographies, so we try to maintain this geocentric affinity across different locales. So what are we doing with EOP? Where is this going? And if you look at the things that we have released in the past, in the last 18 months, and this has been a story, and this is where we have been lucky that it's part of Office 365, so every 2 weeks there's a code release, every 2 weeks there's a feature that might get shipped. We have released a lot of different features with EOP in the last 18 months from the time that the service was launched. But going forward, and that white label right there is the going forward scenario, we are investing in different areas. We are trying to think of things that we have not invested before. So bulk mail was one of them. You probably saw that in the demo as well. The other area that I would like to call out is the advanced persistent threat attacks. So for example, think about the time of click attacks. Think about messages that are received in your organization, and you as an administrator want to take an action based on whether your user clicked on that malicious link. So we are investing in those scenarios as well, and you'll see them come to the service within the next 6 to 12 months period. We have a detailed post on this on blogs.office365.com, where you can learn more about this and see where EOP is headed in the future. So that was all about spam, all about secret, malware and virus protection. But we are now moving on to the next segment of this session, which is all about your encryption controls in Office 365. This section is going to be very demo heavy, so we will take questions as they come, but we will be also be aware of the timelines. And Tariq here is going to walk us through the next segment on encryption.
Good morning, everybody. Okay, is it on? Okay, so I'm Tariq. I'm a principal program manager in the information protection team, owning the product itself. So when he was talking about EOP offers, the engineer itself being on call, I am on call every 3 months. So if something goes wrong, call will eventually come to me, and I'll be logging onto the service and looking at any encryption issues if you are experiencing. So let's talk about encryption. Why is it needed? Why it matters to you as organizations, CISOs, admins, or your users? So think about, like, if you are a doctor's office and you need to send them their lab results, and the compliance or the healthcare industry that you are in or part of requires that anything that is patient related, either their lab results or their ID number or the prescription details, must be encrypted and delivered to the patient or the recipient in an encrypted format, just not the channel but the payload itself. Or you are a bank and you provide the facility to not just email the credit card itself, but let's say your client is traveling, he lost his credit card. He can't call because he's international traveling, high rate for calls. But you email the bank, hey, I lost my credit card. Here's the information that you might need to prove me that this is who I am. And then the bank emails you back the credit card. And then you want to make sure that that email got delivered in an encrypted payload. Or you are a part of a team where you are discussing something high confidential, and you within the team want to make sure that only folks, member of the team, can view that email or that document, and nobody outside the current org can view it, even if they can get to it, or nobody can forward that email, for example, to rest of the org saying that, hey, we are about to release this new cool new project or this product, go sign up early for it. And then there is very specific encryption requirements that we are discussing a design proposal or something groundbreaking, and I'm talking to my buddy who is a research scientist, and I want to make sure that when I'm talking to him, the encryption happens and the decryption happens at peer-to-peer level. Like, not even the admin of the company can listen in or peek in with some crazy transport rules or with a copy of the message what we are talking about. So let's look at what Office 365 offers you as an admin, CISO, or users to in the encryption landscape. So before we get into the details, I want to set the stage. We have a company called Contosa Pharma who is doing drug trials. Within the company, there is an admin called Sanjay, the researcher, which is actually making the medicine Rosella. And part of the trial team is Serena, Jackie, and since I'm doing the demo, I have to be in the demo, and myself. And on the left, we got the two doctors that are referring the patients to these to the Contosa Pharma, and then Serena has to communicate with those two doctors, sharing some patient data. She needs to talk to Rosella about something very confidential about the drug results, which she doesn't want anybody else to know because somebody's hair might be turning green and they don't want to get seen or heard about any time. Or the folks in the trials team may need to share documents, and how do we enable you to do that? So what does Office 365 offers you in terms of encrypting content? As Shobit talked about at the beginning, in February we released something called Office 365 Message Encryption, which lets an organization or a user encrypt a message to any recipient. It doesn't have to be inside the org or the team or your friend, to any email address without any prior knowledge. It could be a Yahoo account, a Gmail account, a Microsoft account, a your domain.com account. It lets you send an encrypted email, and I'll go in deep in demo on how that works. And then there's information rights management, which has two pieces to it. One is the encryption itself, and on top of the encrypted payload, you can enforce usage restrictions like do not print, do not forward, do not edit, which is good for within a company where you are trying to collaborate with close group, or you want to share something company-wide which you don't want to have accidentally leaked. And then the lastly is S/MIME, which is probably older than Shobit, but not me, is where you know your recipient certificate and you have your own private key, and then you sign with your private key and you encrypt it to the public key of the recipient. And the entire communication is encrypted from peer to peer, like from your machine to the other guy's machine. Nobody in the middle can view it. So let's start going into details. So Office 365 message encryption is really set up to easy to set up from an admin point of view. If you are not Exchange Online, you can go literally run three PowerShell scripts to enable it for your organization, which is really about, hey, here's my key, which is from Azure RMS. You need to import it and go ahead and enable it for my organization. You as an administrator can configure transport rules to trigger encryption on messages that match a certain criteria, and we'll go into details in that. And then as an admin or for compliance reasons, whenever the recipient replies to an OME message, the replies are also encrypted. But you as an admin can still view what's the content of the encrypted messages for any compliance. For example, somebody's replying back and it had something like a credit card number in it or anything, and you want to have a policy set, hey, if anybody is sending me credit card or somebody is sharing outside my team, I want to generate an incident report. And you can couple that as an admin. From an end user perspective, as a sender, you type the mail as it normally would be, except that your admin tells you, hey, make sure you put the word secure in the subject line or the word encrypt in the subject line, and I'll make sure that the message is encrypted. And from a recipient perspective, they just get an email like any other email, except that this is formatted in a certain way. We tell them, hey, go download the attachment, open it, click on the link, authenticate, and view the message. It might sound complicated as I'm telling it, but we'll take a look at it. You might be asking during the demo, which I want to clarify up front, so how does a recipient authenticate and how do we prove that it is really that recipient who we sent the message to? So we rely on three things. If you are sending a message to a non-Office 365 email account, we ask the user to either create a Microsoft account if they already don't have one for that particular email address. What I mean by that is, if you have a Gmail account, you can create a joe@gmail.com as the Microsoft account and sign in to Microsoft services like OneDrive, Xbox Live, you name it. If you are an Office 365 recipient, you already have organizational accounts with which you sign into O365 with. And then lastly, we released something very recently based on the feedback is one-time passcode, where when you get the email, you want to view it, and you say, hey, I don't want to do any of this sign-in business. Just send me a one-time passcode. I send this one-time passcode. The recipient receives it. Type it into the web form that told that, hey, I sent you a one-time passcode. And he continues on viewing the message. And as Office 365 supports new identity providers or account stores, OME will naturally do that too. So let's look at the demo, going back to my company scenario. So in this case, Serena wants to share some patient's data with Dr. Tony, who is a Hotmail user, uses his PC for work, and with Dr. Alex Darrow, who is a Gmail user and also uses PC and his phone occasionally. And we'll take a look how it's going to work. So I'm going to switch to 5. All right, so in this case, Serena calls Sanjay up saying that, hey, Sanjay, I know I can use IRM, I can use S-MIME, but I need to talk to these two doctors. What can I do? And Sanjay says, okay, well, I have a solution. I was a tech ed earlier this year, and they announced something called Office 365 message encryption, and I can go ahead and leverage that. So he goes into Exchange, so you can see this is Exchange Admin Center. He goes to Mailflow section to save time and make sure the rules are copied everywhere. Sanjay has already created a rule, or I have created a rule that says, hey, if the message is going outside the organization ever, come on, and it contains the word encrypt, which is what he told Serena to do, to put the word encrypt in the subject line, it will make sure that the message will get encrypted using Office 365 message encryption. Now, in this case, I'm just limiting it on to the keywords. You could have combined with a lot of other things. You could have limited this rule to just Serena based on the recipient information combined with the word encrypt. Sanjay knows about data loss prevention as well. So he asks Serena, hey, what are you sending in those emails? And she says, hey, I'm going to be sending the social security numbers. Sanjay knows that Serena is a busy person. She may actually forget to put the word encrypt in the subject line, but he still wants to make sure that that data stays safe. So he configures another rule that is the same format saying going outside the organization, and this term, instead of looking for the word encrypt, he looks for social security numbers in the email. And if those are found, he encrypts those messages as well. Any questions while I'm logging into Serena's account, where I'm going to send the mail from? Okay, so here, I'm going to go log on as Serena. By the way, this is real code running in production. All my demos is real code except for one place where I have the early bits, and I will give you guys a heads up where it may lag for me. So she composes an email to Dr. Tony Ramos and Dr. Alex Darrow. She says the word encrypt. Here is the patient info. To save some time, I'm going to go to my cheat sheet and copy this. There you go. So I'm going to go send that mail. Let's try the other rule, see if it works. Dr. Ramos, Dr. And she says, hey, here is the info you guys asked. And she forgets to put the words encrypt in the subject line. And she copies that content, which has the social security numbers. So what do you guys think going to happen? Message going to get encrypted? Not encrypted? I see a few nods. No, I see no. OK, let's see that. Click send. While the message is in transit, I'm going to go log in as Tony Ramos first. So here are the two messages that came in right within 1 minute of each other. This is the first one. Again, the message went through Exchange Office 365 and encrypted via Office 365 message encryption. Sanjay, as he had configured the rules, he something co-branded in the message saying that, hey, this message is coming from Contoso Pharma Secure Messaging System. So doctor is feeling a bit comfortable. So the instruction says, hey, go download and open the attachment. In this case, he clicks on the download link, clicks save, and clicks open. Now, this is where Sanjay had also made the attachment Contoso friendly, added the Contoso logo to it. And doctor sees, yep, I need to sign in with my email address and I need to click sign in. And he does that. Now, behind the covers, we are posting something back to Office 365. And part of the information, there is something metadata, which says who the recipient of this encrypted message was. In this case, it was Tony Ramos. We call a backend service to say, hey, what kind of email address is Dr. Tony Ramos at hotmail.com? The answer came back, hey, this is already a Microsoft account. I redirect that request while I'm holding the encrypted payload to Microsoft account service. They single sign him on SSO because he was just signed into his Hotmail, redirects back with the token that is signed by Microsoft. I get proof that this is Tony Ramos and it is authenticated by Microsoft account service. I do further checks and I show Tony him his message. From here, he can reply, he can forward, he can reply all, and anything done to this message from this portal is going to be encrypted going forward, whoever is in the recipient. Now let's go to see what the experience Dr. Alex is going to get. He's going to start a new session and going to go Gmail. Okay, here, same two messages. This one was the second one that I sent, in which I forgot to put the word encrypt, but DLP kicked in, found the message containing social security numbers, and encrypted the message using Office 365 message encryption. Same experience. Hey, go download the attachment. He clicks on the download link, saves it, opens it, and he gets the same instruction. Hey, you need to sign in with dralexdarrow@gmail.com. Dr. Alex is not quite sure, so he said, yeah, let me try that. He clicks on the link. I do the same thing again. I query, what kind of account is dralexdarrow@gmail.com? The answer was none. Dr. Alex Darrow is not a very Microsoft-friendly user or Microsoft-happy user, so he has never created a Microsoft account. I offer him, hey, do you want to create a Microsoft account with Dr. Alex Darrow? Or you want to get a one-time passcode and just get on with viewing the message? He is not quite sure about creating an account, so he says, hey, just get me one-time passcode. I want to view that message. He clicks on that link. We told him, hey, I just sent you a one-time passcode. He goes back to his inbox. Here's the mail. He knows the shortcut, keyboard shortcuts. It's for the reference code 6089. He goes back. Yep, it matches. Paste that and clicks continue. We are keeping track on the back end which passcode with which reference code for what message to what recipient is being sent to. All of that matches, and I showed Dr. Alex Darrow his message. And now he can do the same thing as Tony was doing. He can reply to this message, and anything done to that message is going to be encrypted again. Any questions about this so far before I jump into the next demo?
Yeah, what if you want to view the message again?
We will just view that message on the phone right after I answer any other questions. So I'll show you that experience. Any other question? The question was, what if he wants to view the message again? And I'm going to show you that experience right after this. Somebody else had raised a hand?
Must I have the Azure encryption key or have my own key bring in the Azure platform? So that nobody from Microsoft has access also to the keys.
Okay, so the question is, can I bring my own key, correct? Yep. Today, Exchange Online does not support that, but we are looking into how I enable that, where you can bring your own key into Exchange, into Azure RMS or Azure Key Management, and then Exchange or OME will use that key to encrypt the messages with. We don't have that today, but we are definitely looking into enabling that. Okay, let's quickly jump to the mobile phone of Dr. Alex Darrow. So this is the real device, and I'm going to go ahead and go to the Gmail inbox, open up that message that we just looked at, which was sent without the subject encrypt in it. So assume for a second I don't have an app installed that I'm going to show you in a second. So he clicks on the attachment. Since Dr. Alex Darrow is techie, he sees this is an HTML file. Forget there's an OME viewer just for a second. He says, I'm going to open that in HTML viewer. The file detects that this is being opened on an Android or an iOS device. And he tells Alex Darrow, hey, you need to open this message in OME viewer. And if you don't already have one, click on the link to download. I have already installed this on this device because the apps are not on the App Store or Google Play yet, because we are targeting end of this year, going through the same, you know, review, compliance, internal approval process. So he goes to the Google Play Store, downloads the app, goes back to the message, and selects OME Viewer this time. Here, the same attachment showing up in the same format as it was showing in the desktop. This time around, he says, hey, why do I have to sign up each time? So he sees a link at the bottom that says, don't want to sign in? Click here to get a one-time passcode to view a message. He taps on that, and it's doing the same thing as the desktop client was doing, is sending something to the back end. In this case, we skipped the whole thing about, hey, you don't have a Microsoft account, click here to get one, or click here to get a one-time passcode. I just sent him a one-time passcode. I'm going to quickly switch the app. Go back to my inbox. Here's the new mail that came in. Going to tap, copy, go back to OME Viewer, paste that in, click continue, and doing the same thing, verifying it's really Dr. Alex Darrow, and I'm going to show him the message in a mobile-friendly way as I was showing him on the desktop on a desktop view. This is all built on using the same code and the formatting and the rich features of OWA on Office 365. He can choose to reply this, and the experience is very similar to composing a message using OWA on Office 365 on a mobile device. And the keyboard should pop up. I think it's still loading some JavaScript files. Any questions about this? Okay. Let's get back to the deck. So as we saw, Serena sends two messages to Tony and Alex outside the org using OME, where the message was encrypted end-to-end, and delivered to the doctors as an encrypted payload, and they had full control on where they want to view it, when they want to view it, and how they want to view it. Okay, I'm going to quickly skip these slides. This was for the case where the phone didn't work. Okay, wrapping up OME, Sanjay went through and configured the rules. He can do it via UI, or he can use PowerShell and have complicated rules. He went and used PowerShell to customize the opening text in the email or even add a disclaimer to the email as Tony was viewing in his email client or Alex was viewing it on his phone or his Gmail. And then he also added branding to the portal saying, this is Contosa Pharma Secure Email Portal. He could have named it FUBAR. And he also added a logo to the portal, Contosa Pharma's portal. And then composing a message is the same functionality as if anybody is using OWA or Outlook Web Access as part of Office 365. So quickly wrapping up, Serena sends an email, goes to Exchange Online. Here's the rules configured by Sanjay. Message gets delivered to the internet user, Alex. He opens it up, goes to the portal. We make sure it is really the right user, decrypt, brand the portal, and show the message that message to the user. Let's look at some details that some of you might be asking. So what is the encryption technology we use? We build this on top of RMS or IRM. We use 2048-bit long keys and SHA-256, and it's called CryptoMode 2. If anybody's interested in learning more about it, just go to TechNet and search for CryptoMode 2, and it has details. Encrypted messages are sent just like a regular mail, but with an HTML file, which actually contains the encrypted payload. And that is the same way as the RMS messages are. Basically, we take the RMS-protected message, wrap it up in an HTML file, and send it to you. So you don't have to have any proprietary client installed on your machine. As long as you can open that HTML file in a browser, which has JavaScript enabled, you can view the message on that message. User authenticate by three ways, either Microsoft account, organizational account, or using a one-time passcode. One thing I quickly want to show, which I forgot to show, that you might be asking. So here, some feedback we got, which is not released yet. Hey, one-time password is great, but I go back and forth a lot on the emails whoever is sending me because I want to have a communication with that. And I don't want to sign in with a passcode each time I get a new mail. Looking back at the one-time passcode input screen, when Alex is going to type in the passcode, he can use the checkbox at the bottom, where I'm going to sign him for next 12 hours. So any messages he gets for that email address again, he doesn't have to do any of that, get a passcode and type it in. He can click on just view this message, and then we will sign him on as long as he had checked, and it's 12 hours has not passed yet. Okay? And then portal is all brandable by you with your company logo, statements, disclaimer, and all of that, and any message replied from the portal are also encrypted. Before I jump into information rights management, I want to make sure you guys have time to ask questions about Office 365 message encryption. Question.
Okay. So I'd like to ask whether if the recipient is on another Office 3510 or is it on, for example, an on-premise exchange, does the experience change or does the user still have to double-click the HTML file and
the experience is the same. The experience will be just like for Tony. You will get the HTML, you will open that HTML, and then you will go through the process of authenticating. We are definitely looking into how we can optimize the experience for OME messages within O365 organizations because we know this is a message from this O365 org to this O365 org, who the recipient is. And we can definitely we are looking into improving that experience. But right now, the experience is all the same for all the recipients. Question on the back.
Um, So what happens if the recipient's organization blocks HTML attachments coming in? Because that sometimes happens because obviously they can have embedded JavaScript, et cetera. So some organizations block HTML attachments. Does that mean they can't view the encrypted message?
It's a very good question, but yes, today it is required that you must accept HTML files. We are as looking next step is making sure that we have enough information in the HTML file that an organization can look into creating custom rules that says, hey, accept only the HTML, which is an OME HTML file, but ignore the rest. But today it is a requirement that the recipient organization must allow HTML files to be accepted in order for them to view the message. Question in the back.
Hi, I was wondering, is encryption available across all plans or is it just the enterprise plans?
Is the encryption available on all?
So I can answer that. Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
So Office 365 message encryption is available only on the premium plans, so EZ and E4, but it is part of the Azure RMS plan that you can buy as a standalone plan as well. So that basically gives you both Office 365 message encryption and IRM, so you get both of them. Yes, that should be. You can add that to any plan.
Thanks for taking show, but I'm just the engineer. He is the money guy, so he controls all of that. Okay, let's go ahead and get going. 20 minutes left, and I want to go through the rest of the demo. So information rights management, two things to it. As I said, it's encryption, which is the same encryption technology as it is for Office 365 message encryption. And on top of encryption, it allows you to enforce usage rights. So as long as you have the right clients available, things like do not forward, do not print, do not edit, all of those becomes available to you as you are authoring content within an organization. Two pieces to it, information rights management in Exchange Online and in SharePoint. Exchange Online, same thing, easy for you as an admin to configure. If you enable OME or Office 365 message encryption, IRM is also enabled for you because that OME uses IRM as a platform. You can configure transport rules. And you can inspect any of the content to meet business or compliance needs to make sure that the business is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Sender has the ability to actually create a message by direct action using OWA or Outlook client. And also, if the messages meet an exchange transport rule, they will get encrypted with IRM as well. And recipients, as long as they are on the right clients, whether OWA or Office 2013 or 2010 with the right service pack, can view the content without having to go through of any downloading attachment or signing an extra. Just quickly to save time, this is what the UI looks like when an admin is configuring transport rules. Just like they had apply OME, there's an action called apply information rights management, and they can pick templates. Hey, is this message to be blocked from forwarding, or is this only viewable and consumable and actioned upon with people within the company? For OWA, for consuming from an end user, so if Serena was composing email, she could have gone to the .. set permissions and say, hey, this message is never to be forwarded, or it is within for the folks of Contoso Pharma organization. So if somebody forwarded to Alex that way, he would not be able to view the message. For SharePoint, IRM also integrates with SharePoint. And in SharePoint, the permission is set at a library level where you can say, hey, every document in this library is to be protected, and here's the policy. And I'll show you guys that in a second. And end users, when they visit the library and they download a doc or they're trying to add it, the information protection is applied to it at that time. So the next demo that I'm going to show is me, Tarek. I want to share something with my colleagues, and a scenario that we enabled or in right now in a pre-release phase is previously using SharePoint Online and IRM protected libraries, you cannot sync them using the OneDrive for Business sync client to your PC. That was blocked previously. And I'm going to show in this demo creating a document on my desktop, dragging onto the Explorer folder for OneDrive for Business, seeing it show up on my library, and then Serena, in this case, I'm going to use Showbiz laptop or Surface to edit that doc and then open the document back from my Explorer view without having to go to the SharePoint site. All right, so here is my OneDrive for Business folder, and here's the drug trial results library that is empty right now. And let's look at the library settings that I have already set up, saying that any documents going into this library should be IRM protected. So library settings, or information rights management, and saying any documents is to be protected with a label Contosa Pharma, trial teams access only, because I am part of the trials team only, and I only want to share with Serena and the other person in the library. I have additional knobs saying that, hey, I want to allow users to print it. I want users to allow screen readers to read it. And also, how often do they need to prove that they're who they really are? In this case, I'm using just the default policies. So I'm going to click OK. It's not going to make any change for me. So let's go back to the OneDrive folder and snap that here. Here I'm opening up the OneDrive for Business Local Explorer View, empty also. Here's the document that I had created with the drug trial results, with the patient IDs, what kind of effects they had on the patient, and I want to share it with my colleagues. Let's just close that, and I'm going to drag this file to this Explorer View. Since Sync is only running every so minutes to quickly get done with the demo, actually it's syncing already, let's see if I refresh, go back. There you go, document showed up. This was not enabled previously. It is enabled in production just for the Microsoft tenant right now. It will be by the end of this year. We will light it up worldwide for everybody to use in your organization. Now, if I open up this doc, it's going to say, hey, this document is now protected with Contosa Pharma's policy. The information rights management was applied when I uploaded the doc. Here, if I go to Serena's or Showbit's, pretend this is Serena, to her machine. This is my library. Same document showed up here. Click on this. Policy show up. If I open it in Word, Word will make sure it is really Serena. I'm pretending this Showbit is Serena right now. Get the right credentials I need to open the message, and then show me the open the document and show me the document. So it's contacting the Azure Rights Management Service right now. Get the right credentials to really only give it to Serena. Let's add another row to this. Patients, whatever. And here, change to dark green. Click save. And close up. Let's quickly switch to my machine. Okay, here. So, save time and not wait for the sync to happen. So I'm just gonna do a force sync. And this is where my demo is gonna take time, and I'm gonna say sorry for that. I'm using an early build of Office here, so opening a document takes a bit longer on my machine. Any questions while this is taking its time to open it up?
There's a question.
Hi.
Hello.
We use Azure AD rights management currently, and I'm asking, is there an easy way to set up Azure RMS for partners as well? We have some data we would like to share with our customers, and we would like to avoid deploying those accounts into our AD, so we could do a sort of federation inside RMS. I think that might be possible, but I haven't explored the ways.
Can we follow that question up at the end? Because I have 10 minutes left, and that has a longer answer.
Okay.
So while this is opening, I'm going to leave it opening, and I'm going to go back to my deck, and we'll come back in 5 minutes. This is a bug in my Office build. So this is not how long it's supposed to take. So S/MIME, the last topic. It's an industry standard, stamped way of sharing information between peer-to-peer. You must know the recipient's public key to encrypt the email to. If you want to sign, you must have the private key to sign the content with. And in some implementation, you send the public key or the recipient has your public key to prove the authenticity that it is really coming back from who the sender believes to be. Exchange Online continues to support S/MIME. We started supporting S/MIME in Office 365 as of January this year, where OWA on-premises or part of Office 365 supports that with 2013 SP1 or service as of January this year. Again, a simple for admin to set up with Office 365. As long as you've been using S/MIME on-premises or you have the right mechanism to issue certificates to your users, you can use DirSync to synchronize the public certificates from on-premises to Office 365 AD. Senders open OWA just like as they used to, select the S/MIME option, encrypt the message to the recipient, and as long as the recipient are using the right clients and have the private keys available to decrypt the message, they can view the message. Going back to my demo company, in this case, Serena is looking, hey, somebody's hairs are turning green, somebody's dark green. She wants to tell Rosella, hey, Rosella, the drug isn't correct. And she wants to make sure that the message is really only for Rosella, and she is going to use S/MIME in this case so that not even Sanjay can view what are the content of that message. It's still opening. We will see this open. So here, this is Serena's inbox. Compose a new message to Rosella. Hey, things are not good. Your drug is making the hair go green. Please adjust the formula for next round. She's going to click on these dots and say, hey, I want to encrypt this message and sign this message with S/MIME. Says OK, and hit send. Let's look into Rosella's inbox. Here's the message. Since it's S/MIME protected, you can only view this message if you see that in the popped-up version of the inbox message. So I'm going to double-click this. Now, the right control is going to load up. It's going to look the private key that corresponding to the public key that the message was encrypted to, and going to decrypt the message and show Rosella her encrypted message in OWA and saying that, hey, this was from Serena, and the digital signature was also validated. All right, I'm going to check. Nope, it's still taking its time. Sorry, guys. I do have a earlier downloaded version of this, which actually is already in the process. I don't want to double click it. So concluding, this is as an admin, if you guys have used S/MIME for on-premises, previously you would have to use registry keys to manipulate what sort of signing algorithm or always sign, always encrypt options for OWA via registry keys. We have made that part of remote PowerShell for both on-premises and Exchange Online, where you can go do that using remote PowerShell to say, hey, always sign the message, what kind of signing algorithm, what kind of hashing algorithm, with you having the full control on how to S/MIME assign and encrypt the messages. We already saw how it shows up in the UI. So concluding, three ways to encrypt the messages. I don't have that slide here. Within the organization, using IRM, S/MIME for really peer-to-peer within the organization, and then using OME if you ever need to communicate to users outside the organization and you don't know what kind of clients they are using, whether they are on phone, desktop, Gmail, Yahoo, Hotmail, Fabricam, or your domain.com account. We make sure that OME delivers the message encrypted end-to-end. With that, Just something that's coming up tomorrow, there's a session at Azure RMS, and that DLP prevention session happened yesterday. You guys can look at the capabilities of DLP that it offers and how you can combine with some of the encryption technologies as actions to do based on content that is detected using DLP. Shobit, I don't know, yep. You added these.
So go ahead, I mean, if you have any questions at this point, you can go ahead and...
Session eval. And I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
Any questions? And thank you for coming. And my document opened.
By the way, we do have some party office passes as well. If you guys want to collect them, we can collect them right here. We have some of them remaining here.